Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Superior Trading Company against the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is John Rogers, and I represent the appellants in Superior Trading versus Commissioner. This case represents the first 6 months in the start of a new business in Brazil. It was started with great hopes for profit and financial success and the building of a new institution in that country. The sources of profit were from collections, but more importantly, there were also currency gains, implicit collection on fraudulent checks where we could get principal and interest from banks, a legal system where the government paid us to go after small accounts in a basically free and efficient manner from our viewpoint, a country that was on a rising tide of employment and prosperity, so that credits that previously were bad were being restored to profitability, small opportunity for mom-and-pop sales to smaller collectors. This is a straightforward drop and sell. This is not a tax shelter as described in the commissioner's issue paper from 2007, more than 3 years later. The cases of Rovacat, Broadview are a different genre.
Well, now, the partnership or the alleged partnership, what did it actually do in the way of trying to collect these receivables that it received from Arapua?
Okay. Your Honor, the partnership Warwick, all it did was transmit to the holding companies, which were sold to investors. But as a group, there were collectors hired. There were protestados filed,
how much was collected? Because, of course, the Internal Revenue Service, the tax court, think that it wasn't a partnership. It was basically just a sale by Arapua of its portfolio of uncollectible receivables.
Well, that's why
I'm curious what the partnership actually, the alleged partnership actually did with these receivables other than provide them at their face value to the investors so they could have a tax benefit.
Yes, Your Honor. And I emphasize, this is the first 6 months of the business. It took a while to get started. I went there. I viewed the paper. It was first. It had never been collected on. So we had to take it out of bundles, sort it out by collectability, and specifically sort it out for the bank frauds.
Now, over 96% of the receivables were over 180 days past due. So what basis was there for even expecting any collection on the debt?
Your Honor, in Brazil was a whole different world than what we experienced in the U.S. In 2003, people didn't have checking accounts. So we knew that as the tide rose, what were previously uncollectible debts became collectible. So we collected on the bank frauds. We collected on some protestados. We sold some paper in later years for a reported about $8 million in income in 2008, so that this is an ongoing business. It took us a while to get ready. You just don't unbundle hundreds of thousands of checks and sort them overnight to be ready to collect on them. And in the expert report of the IRS, they noted that in 2005, after we had gone through this initial process of setting up the office with about 55 collectors, an accounting staff, computers, dialing machines, that because of the frauds that we were collecting on, the collections increased dramatically, and they continued to get better after that. So this paper from Arapois kept giving for years. It's not reflected in the first year.
What did Arapois do for the, as a partner, other than just sell its portfolio to you, basically?
Well, Your Honor, the Arapois had provided a bad debt reserve against the receivables for 97% of face. They had tried to collect on the receivables themselves, but they were so financially strapped they had to get rid of their collection department. So we were...
It was broke, wasn't it?
It what?
It was broke.
Broke? Yes.
Yeah. So it wanted cash, and so it sold its portfolio of receivables to you. But what else? What did it do as a partner, as opposed to just a seller?
As a partner, I went to Brazil physically myself. I negotiated with the chairman, the finance director, the banker, and the attorneys for
Arapois. Was there a trustee, or is it a debtor in possession type?
There was something comparable to a trustee, and the trustee was fully informed. The only one objecting here is the IRS. And implicit in your question is the question of sale. Arapois contributed these receivables to Warwick. Warwick dropped them down into a separate company for each investor, similar to what we saw in earlier decades with respect to a company like Public Storage, or a typical venture capital situation where the investments are brokered out to smaller investors and with a view to then being rolled back up. And that's why I try to emphasize in my brief, this cannot be looked at as a Warwick case so much as an overall business.
I'm not sure what your answer to Judge Posner is. He's asked you several times what Arapua did to help collect the debt, and so far you haven't said that it did anything.
Okay. Arapua was not directly involved in collecting the debt.
So the answer is nothing. That's fine.
Right.
It's just that getting there fast is the best way to proceed.
Yes, Your Honor. So.
Now, let me ask you to address in particular the finding of the tax court that the amount of basis that Arapua could contribute to the partnership was the current market value because Arapua was cashed out within 2 years.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree that there was...
Obviously you disagree with that, but the question is what's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it is there's no evidence that Arapua received any cash. The tax return of Warwick had Arapois continuing in there as a member. It continued in.
The tax court was not particularly impressed by what Warwick was saying. Let me put it a different way. What is the evidence that after 2 years, Arapua still had its original partnership interest and had not received cash?
The tax return, which Warwick and its follow-on entity, Sugarloaf, filed showing Aeroplus a partner.
Impressed. The tax court didn't believe that Warwick was telling it the truth. I'm asking for concrete evidence.
It remained in the partnership as a partner.
Look, you are not testifying today, Mr. Rogers. What evidence in the record showed that after 2 years, Arapuo remained in the partnership and had not been cashed out?
The tax returns of Warwick.
Okay. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Plus the absence of any cash. And I believe that your question is very important, Your Honor, because that's the point at which the tax court inserted another step in its step transaction analysis. If you go to the cases cited by Appellee, they're talking about a basis shift under 704C of the code. Here, there was no basis shift. It was a straight drop down to investors. There were capital notes which each investor had to provide as part of the transaction, and any deductions claimed were claimed at the trading company level, bad debt deductions, not as loss deductions.
On this whole partnership question, though, wasn't Arapuo, the key thing Arapuo wanted to do was to avoid forced liquidation by getting rid of its receivables, and then your company wanted the tax deduction, but that doesn't really make a real partnership.
Well, Your Honor, that's...
And then I don't even know under Brazilian law whether the transfer of those receivables was allowed since they were in a bankruptcy proceeding.
Okay, let me...
And then you didn't even register the contribution agreement with the Registry of Deeds.
Yes, Your Honor. Let me try to take them one by one. We reviewed and negotiated the contracts and specifically concluded that those steps were not material. Warwick had the paper. The Concorda trustee was informed, got the audit reports, and specifically Arapuo in its audit report said it had invested in Warwick and that it was expecting to get its receipt. Once Arapuo put paper into Warwick, it now had a different asset on its balance sheet. It had a membership in an Illinois LLC that could be marketed. There was a that could be valued. It was different than just paper on its balance sheet. It participated in a substantial collection office. And the overall business enterprise. Whether it was recorded is not relevant. Lots of things aren't recorded, but that doesn't mean they're not valid. And all around the world, you don't do a gratuitous act such as recording a document if you don't have to. You wait until it's necessary to collect on it before you do. And people were informed at that point in time. But more fundamentally, this was an Illinois LLC. It was not a partnership. Arapuo contributed valuable assets, 3% of face on $100 million, then $70 million, and it contributed further so that the assets in there in that LLC were protected from Arapuo creditors by the LLC charging rule. so that it put took that paper off the Iroquois balance sheet, put it into a different category, which gave Iroquois rights it would not have otherwise had. And then secondly, it enabled it to revalue the paper. Once that paper was in that LLC structure with the collection staff and accountants and experts in Brazil who were able to deal with it properly, it was more valuable, at least three times more valuable than sitting as an asset on Iroquois' balance sheet. So, when we get bogged down in this partnership issue, it's not a partnership. It's an LLC, and the IRS issued regulations that said if it's an Illinois LLC with more than two members, it's a partnership. The actual collections over several years probably totaled $1 million. Subsequently, there was a sale reported in 2008 of the residuals of the Iroquois paper for $8 million. Our appraiser had appraised it at $15 million. We only reported it as $8 because he thought that was overly optimistic. So that these Iroquois assets, the fact that they're old makes no difference because in Brazil they're renewed. And the fact that they were old meant that the value at the time Iroquois contributed them was set to skyrocket. As two things happened. At the point of inception, the real was at 25 cents on the dollar. We expected it to go to 75 cents on the dollar, and we had some hope it would go back to par, where it was when these assets were created. The par never happened, but it got close. The fact of putting these assets in the LLC was a great value enhancer, and the IRS admitted to that in the superior trial. These check-the-box regulations were designed specifically to avoid this whole issue of fighting over a partnership.
Now, you realize you're into your rebuttal time. But you're fine. I'll, you can keep going. But I just didn't know.
I'll rest.
But the check-the-box only comes into play when you have something that is either a partnership or a corporation or can be classified as either. If it's not, if it doesn't have the substance of a partnership and corporation, if it's just a sale, then you don't get to the check-the-box.
Well, see, the tax court never established that sale was the more appropriate treatment rather than contribution, which is essential.
No, but that was one of its reasons for saying it wasn't a true partnership wasn't created, that really Iroquois just sold its receivables. It didn't,
Your Honor,
continue to engage in some joint activity. That would
In my brief, I believe I lay down the fundamentals of the reasoning. First, you have an entity. Two entities get together as members in an LLC. The check-the-box regulations say if you do that, you are taxed as a partnership. The cases are...
You don't get to first base unless Iroquois is your partner. If it just sells to you, then it can't transfer... Then its assets don't retain their original basis, their face amount.
Your Honor, I believe to say that Iroquois sold here is a conclusion. It's not supported by the record in the tax court. Warwick had no credit. Arapois continued with the entrepreneurial risk of the overall group of companies. It wasn't going to get anything unless the business was successful. So the fact that Arapois...
Well, it got the million. Didn't it get $1,190,000?
No, Your Honor, it did not. Didn't get anything. Mm-hmm. And...
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Ms. Del Sol.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Ellen Del Sol, and I represent the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Before turning to my argument, I'd just like to thank the Court for its flexibility yesterday when I was having difficulty getting flights. The clerk indicated that you were willing to hear argument. My phone is necessary, and I appreciate the Court's flexibility. Fortunately, I was able to make it this morning. This case involves a series of transactions that comprise a well-documented abusive corporate tax shelter scheme. It's almost identical to the transactions that took place in the Southgate case in the Fifth Circuit, where the Court didn't allow the claim losses.
Was Mr. Rogers correct when he said that Arapai didn't receive any money for its portfolio of receivables?
Your Honor, one of the things about this transaction is that there is an extreme lack of substantiation. Arapai clearly expected to receive cash, and there is a documentation in the record that it did receive something. There's a letter dated March 4th at page 194 of our supplemental appendix, where it actually acknowledges receipt of something in redemption of cash in redemption of its partnership interest, which makes it very clear that the redemption happened. And in fact, all through the proceedings up until reconsideration, and Mr. Rogers didn't dispute that the redemption had happened, and in fact, in his testimony, he said that it had. But there's lack of substantiation regarding what exactly went where. The record indicates that in 2003, for example, investors paid $2,381,000 in payments, half of which went to Brazil for the purchase of the holding company interest. And it's not really – there's no substantiation that really makes clear what went where once it got to Brazil and how that money was handled. But in any case, Arapai definitely did receive something for its receivables and certainly entered into the transaction with the expectation that it would. It actually, its financial statements indicate that it's outsourced its receivables to Warwick and is expecting cash. That's at page 90 through 91, 94, and 95 of our supplemental appendix. And there also were several emails that are included in our supplemental appendix and discussed at pages 43 through 44 of our brief, where Arapai is asking, you know, for a document confirming that it will get the cash out. And so I think it's very clear here on the record that Arapai never had any intention of entering into a partnership, and as Mr. Rogers conceded in argument, never played any role in any debt collection business. I think this really boils down to a situation where, as the Southgate case, I think, very clearly explains at pages 472 through 73 of its opinion, of a basis shifting, an attempt to use shifting of basis to transfer this foreign entity's built-in losses to these partnerships so that wealthy U.S. taxpayers who invested in the transaction could claim the losses. And this is something that the court the Fifth Circuit and Southgate held as not allowed under several of the same reasons that the tax court did here. I'd also point out that this transaction has been the subject of an IRS coordinated issue paper, which is cited in our page 7 of our brief. And Mr. Rogers and his company Jetstream, which was the managing partner of these entities, have both been enjoined under the stipulated injunction entered by the North District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, which is included in Volume 2 of our supplemental appendix.
Is it correct that this, even if it were a genuine partnership, that in 2004 that the tax advantages which it conferred were abolished?
Congress did change the law going forward, but it doesn't apply to the period.
No, I understand. But
yes,
did it entirely abolish this kind of?
I think it.
Or
I believe
something of it.
I believe there are limits. I think it's almost entirely abolished. I think there are some very limited amounts.
The change in 2004 meant that only the person contributing the underwater debt could claim the higher basis.
That is correct, Your Honor, basically.
No one in a transaction like this other than Arapua could claim the original basis.
Correct.
It didn't abolish these kinds of transactions.
Right.
It doesn't
exactly, Your Honor.
Changed
yes, that's
who gets the basis.
Right, right. During the years at issue, by transferring the built-in losses to the partnership with Warwick and then to the trading companies, that created the ability for the partners in those entities to then claim these built-in losses that could pass up the chain to the actual investors who are U.S. taxpayers. And that's exactly what the Southgate Court held wasn't allowed. And I think the Southgate case is important for another reason. Mr. Rogers, in his arguments on brief and before the court this morning, has emphasized that there was evidence that this was a real business. And the tax court declined to reach the economic substance issue because it found that there were easier ways to resolve this case on several alternative grounds. And I think ultimately, if it had reached the issue, it wouldn't have found economic substance. But in Southgate, there actually was economic substance. The court found that there actually was potentially a business transaction that had some economic purpose in terms of buying the Chinese non-performing loans that were at issue there. But what was important was that the partnership had no business purpose.
Is there any appellate decision about these kinds of transactions other than Southgate?
At this point, there's not, Your Honor. The Third Circuit currently has a case on submission, the Rovacat case, but they haven't. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
That was submitted without oral argument, and we're waiting decision in that case. But there
sure
are several.
Let us know if they manage to decide it before we manage to decide this one.
We certainly will, Your Honor. Additionally, there are several lower court cases, which are cited at page 7 of our brief, which have agreed with the Southgate opinion as well. And I think, you know, what's really crucial here is that this basis transfer, that's the whole reason for the U.S. taxpayers being able to claim the U.S. losses, doesn't exist if there's no partnership. And as I've mentioned and discussed already, Arapua, the record indicates, didn't intend to participate in a partnership with Jetstream to collect these receivables. It wanted its cash out, as the several items in the record I've mentioned demonstrate. Additionally, I think the fact that the way that Jetstream conducted business, and Mr. Rogers was its sole share, was in control of Jetstream through his S Corporation PPI, the conduct of Jetstream indicates that it really wasn't seriously interested in collecting these receivables. It, as Judge Williams recognized, it didn't take the steps that Brazilian law indicated needed to be taken to secure a good title to these receivables so that they could actually be collected on for the benefit of these partnerships. Not only did the government's Brazilian law expert determine that was required under the recording and getting permission of the bankruptcy court and the bankruptcy trustee was required under Brazilian law, also Mr. Rogers got an opinion, the Guimarães opinion, which is Exhibit 29J, in the record, which indicated he needed to take these steps. So I think there are two sources of Brazilian law indicating that he didn't really do what he needed to get the control of the assets that would really ensure the ability to get the money. And he suggested an argument that it was sufficient that Arapua's financial statements indicated that it had entered into this transaction with Jetstream in the formation of through contributing assets to Warwick, or what was actually selling assets to Warwick, I would say. I think notice to the bankruptcy court entails something more than just, oh, it should have been aware of financial statements somewhere. I mean, there's no evidence of any notice in the record. So I think on this record, the tax court correctly held that no valid partnership was formed.
Is there a difference between the Culbertson standard for determining whether you have a valid partnership and just the substance over form? The general substance over form principle in tax law?
Well, I think there are two different doctrines that, there are two different concepts. First, Culbertson governs whether you have a valid partnership, and it requires the two parties to join
why
together.
Why is the question of the validity of a partnership separated out from the general substance over form
Well, I think they are in some ways related doctrines.
Related? I don't understand why there would be any difference between them.
Well, I think you in theory could have a situation where you had a real partnership formed, but a particular transaction was one that was run through the partnership, and it actually was something that was just structured a particular way using the partnership.
I know, but if you have a pretend partnership that has no economic substance, doesn't have any. Does what partnerships do. Why wouldn't you just say that was an example where the form was used for tax purposes, there was no substance to it?
I think either is an equally valid approach. I mean, I think if there's no partnership...
I don't see the difference. That's my problem.
Well, I think there's situations...
Trouble by multiplication of doctrines when there doesn't seem to be any need for more than one doctrine.
Well, I think there are situations where there could be a need, and for that reason the courts have developed them this way. But I think the Culbertson inquiry is whether there's a partnership at all. And if there's no partnership at all, the court doesn't need to go any further.
But of course there is a partnership. The question is whether it's more than just a facade for preferential tax treatment, which is the substance over form doctrine.
Well, I think the point of Culbertson and some of the and the many cases in these kind of transactions that have applied at standard, like the ASA Investorings and the TAFD case that we cite in our brief, is that you can have the paper to make a partnership, and you can check the boxes or whatever it is that Mr. Rogers contends.
That is the substance over form doctrine. You
but
have
that
a
is,
merger,
yeah.
right?
But you don't have a real partnership.
The papers are fine, but...
But you don't have a real partnership. And then, yes, Your Honor, I think it's a very similar analysis, and they do sort of in many ways tend to merge together, as does the economic substance doctrine. But I think because in different fact situations, one might be more applicable than another, the courts have sort of carved them out. And I think certainly here, both doctrines lead to the same result, that this was not a transaction that could serve to transfer this basis, and that what effectively happened was that Arapois sold its receivables to Warwick. And the court found that for a number of different reasons. Additionally, there are provisions in the code under Section 707 and the regulations there under that provide that this sort of transaction is a disguised sale when the partner, if there even is a real partnership, if the partner receives money or consideration for a transfer of assets to the partnership within a certain amount of time, that's presumed to be a sale. So I think there are a lot of different grounds here that lead to the same result, and that is that these losses shouldn't be allowed because they were all it was
when
all.
The law was changed in 2004. Was there any grandfathering?
No, Your Honor, not that I'm aware of. And I guess I would also point out that to the extent that Mr. Rogers points to business endeavors afterwards, I think that they all are not relevant here because they, you know, once the audit started, that he might have gone back and tried to make the appearance of some economic substance with later collection efforts really doesn't pertain to the issue here of whether at the time the entity was Warwick was formed, or the purported entity was formed, that whether there was a real intent to create a partnership and to carry out this business. Are there any remaining questions from the court regarding the various theories for which on which the tax court disallowed the losses? If they're not, I'd like to just turn to a moment to the penalties. First of all, Mr. Rogers argues on his brief that this is a case where gross valuation penalties can't apply. And I think, first of all, he cites the Fifth Circuit's minority cases in Todd and Heasley, which are cases where the courts have held that court and also the Ninth Circuit have held that gross valuation penalties can't apply where you have a transaction completely disallowed for economic substance. And that doesn't apply here because what happened, every reasoning the tax court offered was based on the overstatement of basis and disallowing the overstatement of basis. So I think clearly this is not even a case to which that minority rule could apply. But in any event, I would just emphasize that the courts have repeated, you know, a large majority of circuits have held that those cases are not correct. And even the Fifth Circuit in a special concurring opinion in Beaumont rejected that view. So if the court should reach that issue, I would urge the court to follow the majority view. And I know that issue is now on appeal to
Thank you. It doesn't
Supreme Court
matter at all. If we follow the majority view
right,
or the minority
because
view,
I don't think
the Supreme Court will decide Woods, and that will be that.
Yes, and this court need not reach it here. I'd also just like to address briefly the reasonable cause defense he raises. The reasonable cause defense requires looking at the sophistication and education of the taxpayer. And as this court recognized in American Boat, here you look to Mr. Rogers because he was the person who controlled Jetstream, who was the managing partner. And he's a tax lawyer with over 40 years of experience. He's had numerous position partnerships in a large accounting firm, Arthur Anderson, and with law firms, corporate experience. He has an MBA. He's got a lot of finance experience. He's a sophisticated, basically, as you get. I should have known this transaction was not permissible. This case is different from Southgate, where the court didn't apply penalties because the person ultimately in that management position in Southgate had no legal training. He was a businessman and additionally had gotten independent legal opinions. And Mr. Rogers did not look to any independent legal opinion here. I mean, he didn't go to outside counsel. He himself was interested in the transaction as he was promoting it, and he didn't go to any outside counsel. So At the partnership level, the court should affirm the holding that the reasonable cause defense is not available and that the partnership level determination of penalties is correct. Are there no further questions? I have nothing further. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our second case.